are listening to the Stick and Hack Show, a show about golf and life from a stick and a hack. Now, here is your host, Adam Grubb and Mike Ryan.
All right, everybody, welcome in. It is the Stick and Hack Show. I'm your host, Adam Grubb. That's Mike Ryan over there with Stick. Mike, how are you?
Super. I was just thinking about how much producer Shane's just been longing for a real quarterback again. So he put a Donovan McNabb bobblehead on our thing here. So.
Oh, that's right. This is the thing we're not supposed to mention, though, every show, remember?
Too late.
You missed the pre-show meeting.
I'm a rule breaker.
That's Stick and Hack Show, quite possibly the greatest golf show in the free world, from the greatest golf club in the world without the course. Guest today is Colin Burns, general manager of Wingfoot. That's right.
Yeah.
The Wingfoot. Colin Burns, GM, and he is with us here in just a minute. That'll be an exciting conversation. Looking forward to it. First up, though, Mike, the stories of Wingfoot. Now, this is one of those courses and one of those clubs that everybody knows, and everybody. It's a, I'm sure, a bucket list for a lot of people. They've watched the Opens there. It is history. Almost 100 years old now. At this point, it is one of the most famed golf courses and golf clubs, but it is a golf club, and they make that distinction. However, in the course of Colin's career, he has turned that into an experience, and his job as hospitality and general manager is to make sure that the people there, the golf course is going to take care of itself, and the golf is amazing, but that the experience of being at Wingfoot is something next level, and so he's going to talk to us about that. But the stories of Wingfoot are famous. One in particular, Peter McGarry was a 16-year-old caddy at Wingfoot in 1974, the same year the club hosted its third U.S. Open. At the time, some players still took local caddies, including a young man from Joplin, Missouri, by the name of Hale Irwin. At the start of the week, McGarry was assigned to Irwin's bag and given a front-row seat to Irwin's Open, winning 287 for the week. While he won't discuss the payday publicly, we'd imagine that McGarry had pretty deep pockets and a strong resume when he returned to school for 11th grade. How was your summer?
I just can't even
a caddy for a U.S. Open winner. Next question.
Like,
how was yours? How was camp?
That would never happen today, but no. I wish it would.
Right.
I wish we were still like able to have something like that happen.
The dude's 16.
Yeah.
I can't be at practice this weekend
for
Little League because I'm going to be at the U.S. Open as a caddy. But thank you. Enjoy the Fireman's Tournament.
Exactly.
Peter McGarry, fame story there at Wingfoot. And then the most famous of Wingfoot's U.S. Opens was that 1974 when Hale Irwin won with a winning score of 7 over par. I'll repeat that. 7 over par.
Yeah.
No major has had a higher winning score in relation to par since. The 1974 U.S. Open was dubbed the Massacre at Wingfoot and produced one of the most famous quotes in golf history. "We're not trying to humiliate the best players in the world. We're simply trying to identify them," said USGA President Sandy Tatum.
That's still their mantra.
In some cases, it could be. Many believe the 1974 U.S. Open was USGA's response to the previous year's championship, where Johnny Miller shot a 63 to win at Oakmont. "How thick was the rough at Wingfoot? They had trouble finding their ankles, much less the golf ball," said one player. "Players lost balls in the rough and putted balls off the green. It was easily the most difficult course I've ever seen," Irwin said, en route to his victory. Now, the course doesn't have water, doesn't have a lot of, it's just, there's no dramatic landforms. It's 18 really difficult holes and a couple of little creeks. But the USGA set it up that way that year for whatever reason. The question of the week was why. Famed golf writer Dan Jenkins wrote in Sports Illustrated, "Where did it say in all of the lore of the game that Wingfoot was a killer? The answer was in the subtle design of the course, no water to speak of, and even the trees do not often come into play. But the tumbles and turns of those old-fashioned elevated greens, and the bunkers," comes writer Dan Jenkins. The Massacre at Wingfoot.
Yeah, I wish, I think that's one of the things that when you think about all the discussions that go on around equipment and all this kind of thing and making golf courses longer, that these older courses are something that they need to look at in golf really moving forward is the design. If you set up the course in the right way, it's going to be hard, period. Yeah. It doesn't matter what equipment you're playing, in my opinion.
There's a couple of old clubs in Chicago. There's a couple old clubs all across the country that were built in that 20, 30 range, and that's how they did it. They just created a difficult golf course without tricks, without weirdness, without water placed right in front of the green just for the hell of it. They were very strategic and some of the best golf course designs. And that's why Wingfoot is still around. That's why Wingfoot is Wingfoot. That's why they've held six U.S. Opens. It's an incredible, incredible spot. And the person who is the general manager of that famed course of Wingfoot, Colin Burns, joins the Stick and Hack Show. Colin, welcome in.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Adam. Hope you all are well.
We are indeed, sir.
Absolutely.
I'm going to read off your bio here. 1991, Colin Burns joined the storied Wingfoot Golf Club as a general manager. You are now the longest serving GM in the history of the club, and your longevity speaks volumes for your commitment to a club that you revere as well as a keen management style and unparalleled ability to guide and nurture a staff of over 150 employees. What does it take to run Wingfoot? Well, apparently, Colin Burns. Colin, when you started your job at Wingfoot, what did they tell you about the mystique of the golf club that you are now in charge of?
Well, I think the first thing that I learned, and it was July of 1991, I was taking some professional development courses up in Cornell, and I was asked to come down and interview, and I did, and I was sitting there having dinner. I remember the table. I remember who was at the table, I mistakenly used the term Wingfoot Country Club. And that was literally the last time I ever used the term country club in reference to Wingfoot. I was stopped immediately by my dear friend, Bill Gardella. And he said, young man, this is a golf club, not a country club. We don't do any of that country club stuff here. So that was sort of set the tone, not just in terms of sort of the formality of the club at the time, but also the fact that this was not a country club, that this was a place of golf to be respected and to always be first and foremost. So that was I'm not sure if that was a mistake, but that was certainly the tone that was set from the beginning, and I've never lost that.
You know, Colin, you guys have hosted U.S. Opens dating back to 1929, and, you know, they've all been thrilling, but probably one of the most notable was last year under the pandemic. Can you kind of give us an insider's look at, you know, what was that like?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Mike, to look back now, almost exactly a year ago when we were making some very critical decisions. At the time, besides personally being incredibly ill and not knowing sort of what direction my life was going in, we were having to make decisions on a weekly basis, first and foremost. And it was just about literally a year ago, maybe 2 weeks later than that. But we had to make decisions about the tents. We had the city that was about to be built as per the June schedule. And we were having a weekly call with our partners at the USGA. And I have to tell you, and it's funny, I was speaking to John Bodenhammer yesterday. It really was a life lesson about partnership. You know, we could have sort of sat in our corners or gone in our own direction, sort of being unreasonable and having unrealistic expectations. But instead, we worked collectively. And the USGA at the time was working with the Masters, the PGA Tour, PGA of America to sort out this very complicated schedule in addition to NFL. So on a weekly basis, we were making decisions. And the first decision was, we can't build anything. We're going to build it. It's going to be a ghost city. We're going to kill turf. We're going to be bringing in vendors from all over the country, possibly spreading COVID. You know, we were just 4 miles away from the epicenter in New Rochelle. And that made our lives very, very tense. And I think the other lesson besides partnership was all about the fact that it's just a game. Let's not forget that we have colleagues, friends. We lost an employee early on in the process. People were getting sick on a daily basis. So I don't think any of us, you know, the board at Wingfoot, Brendan Boyle, who's the president, a great job just keeping everything sort of even keel. Let's not forget that as important as this championship is to us, people are dying on a daily basis. So we really had a very, very keen perspective on life. So here it was. We had planned. We had been working on this, you know, regularly for 5 years and very intensely for 2 years prior, and now we had to unwind everything. So it began with no tents. Let's not build anything, because we knew even if there were some limited spectators, we weren't going to need all these tents. And that was sort of the beginning of the unwinding of 5 years of planning. And again, it was week by week where we saw, and we were following very closely the memorial. You know, because they had originally said 10,000 spectators, and then it was 5,000 spectators. They were going to have RFID devices. They were going to be able to corral them. And I remember the conversation I had with Jim Nance, and he used the Tiger Surge as a term. And she found Jim. And by the way, Jim and I, what you see on television is who Jim is. He is a dear friend. He's a dear man. He's compassionate. He's generous with his time. And he's just an outstanding human being. And so anyway, we were talking regularly at that time. He was curious, and I was about what we were doing. And I was always interested in picking his brain about things. And he said, no, I don't care how many people you have, what you do in terms of corralling and RFID devices, whatever else. When Tiger or Phil or pick a player, particularly Tiger, heads to 18, there's no way you're keeping. I don't care if it's 1,000, 5,000, 10,000. There's no way they're not converging. And I think, you know, in retrospect, clearly he was right. And I think the authorities in New York State, Westchester County, all agreed that there was no way to realistically do it. So we came to the decision, no spectators. We then had to contact New York State, work with Governor Cuomo, Dr. Zucker, and come up with a plan that said, okay, we can do this with no spectators, and here's how we're going to do it.
I thought that it was cool, no spectators. I know from a financial perspective and the excitement and the players and all that, but I thought it was cool to see for just a brief period these courses in their natural beauty. You never get to see the full course. You never get to see the layout and how it looks, because it's always people lined the sides of the hole. So your course is even more beautiful on TV with no fans than I would have even anticipated it being. But how those old courses are laid out, they're not spread out. They're all in this kind of just tight little area. Was it interesting for you, looking back on it, that people got to experience Wingfoot differently than they have in the past on TV?
You know, Adam, it was really very special for us. You know, we knew the minute the players arrived that this was going to be a very intimate experience. It was quiet. It had this sort of reverential feeling to it. The players were there. There were literally, as you just mentioned, no spectators. There was no one yelling, "You the man," in the hole, whatever other nonsense. There weren't beer gardens. There weren't tents.
Mashed potatoes. Yeah.
Sorry about that. you got to see the club. You know, I kept thinking, I wonder if this is what it was like in 1929, when there were a handful of people. They walked inside the ropes. You know, the guys were all wearing jacket and tie, women wearing skirts, hats, very sort of reverential. Just, you know, we've seen all the photos we've seen many photos from the 29 Open, and it had this feel to it. And I kept thinking, I wonder if this was like. Now, the comments we received, which are interesting, outside of the ropes, people from around the world, and I mean literally from around the world, were sending emails to myself, the board members, to Brian Marcel, who was the chairman, Brendan Boyle, the president of the club, saying, wow, we never knew how beautiful the club is, the clubhouse is. We never knew how beautiful the grounds were. You know, if you saw the coverage, you know, the nighttime Golf Channel coverage was just spectacular. And there were all these, you know, all the foliage, seeing the beautiful, you know, and the clubhouse is, you know, I don't think it's second to any, but maybe, you know, maybe Shinnecock, because that was the first, you know, technically the first clubhouse. Charles Wendehack, who built the clubhouse, who designed the clubhouse, he didn't build it, designed the clubhouse, did a spectacular job. And think about the fact that these founders back in the 20s, right, they had the presence of mind and they had the wherewithal to say, not only do we want A.W. Tillinghast, but we want Charles Wendehack to design. So it was this great collaboration between two of the greatest, you know, technically and artistically able to come together. So that's why you have this uniform, this continuity between the clubhouse and the golf courses. You know, if you've been to the clubhouse, no matter where you walk out, you're walking onto the golf course. And that was the idea. The windows all watch golf. From the windows, you can watch golf. All the doors open out onto the golf course. So the general public got to see that for the first time, and I think that was really exciting.
Colin, the old clubs, and much like the heritage and history of some old universities, you've had to adjust with the times. What are some of the things that you guys have done over the past 30, 40 years that bring more inclusion for your members and for those that want to be experiencing a part of Wingfoot?
Well, you know, I think that we have had to adjust, clearly. I think some of it is dress code. Some of it is, you know, as obvious as cell phones. You know, there was a period when, it's funny, you know, besides the transition of membership, and it's one of the most wonderful memberships you'll ever meet. It's diverse.
It's inclusive. It's fun. You know, it's one of the, we always refer to it as one of the greatest pubs with 36 holes, because it really is. I mean, the Grill Room is just the place to be. It's fun. Again, it's diverse. It's age diverse. It's diverse in every imaginable way. So that's a big change from when I first got there. But, you know, we've, especially over the last 10 or 15 years, technology has been an issue. And we recognize, and by the way, we've always tried to lag a little bit. We've never tried to be out there necessarily leading the pack, because, you know, it's not necessarily our place to do that. So we sort of watch what other clubs have done with cell phone policies, sort of, you know, pick and choose, see what's worked well and what hasn't worked well. Dress code is interesting because, you know, we're very interested. We have an exceptional junior program. Our director of instruction is Alicia Debos. She was the first professional from Lima, Peru. Her name was engraved in the National Stadium. She was quite the celebrity. She started out actually as a young soccer player and then converted to golf when she was about 13. She's quite an athlete. She's an LPGA legend, and she's really exceptional. And she runs our junior program. We have this really robust program. And, you know, you can't ask kids to enjoy the sport and not be, you know, quote, cool. You can't, you know, you can't have the young ladies dressing like they're going to you know, St. Mary's parochial school with the skirts down to their knees. You know, you can't have the guys not, you know, not sort of enjoy the fact that they're, you know, the young boys that they've worked out, because, you know, the physicality of the game is so much different than it used to be when you saw, you know, the old guys with the, you know, with the big bellies, a little bit like myself.
You still see that, Colin. That is rampant at our club.
That's me every weekend.
I was not, by the way, I was going to say present company excluded. And so, you know, we've had to adjust to that. Now, we haven't gone to the point, there's still a certain formality to the club. We don't allow jeans, t-shirts, you know, stretchy Lululemon. But we do want the kids in particular to feel comfortable, because we have an obligation, not just to keep the club sort of robust, but also to grow the game. And again, you can't ask these juniors to participate if they don't feel comfortable. So I said, those are two pretty big changes. You know, the other one, I think, and maybe we'll get to it later, is just what we've done in terms from a hospitality perspective.
Colin Burns, general manager of Wingfoot, the guest here on the Stick and Hack Show.
You know, speaking of that topic, Colin, your job really more is hospitality than it is golf. You know, were you aware that it was more of that when you took the job, or you know,
Mike, I'm not sure what I was aware of. I was pretty stunned. I was pretty stunned when I got the job. You know, I went off, if it were a horse race during my interview process, I went off at about 10,000 to one. You know, there were a lot of established men back then. There weren't a lot of women, and I'm very happy to say there are a lot more women now. And I was this 32-year-old kid who only had 4 years prior experience at a little club in Manhasset called Plandome Country Club, which we used to refer to as the Knights of Columbus with a golf course. It was
right
pretty Blackham soccer.
Right up my
alley.
Oh, yeah,
just for now, the three of us would pull up to the barn on Wednesday night and fit right in.
Absolutely.
Really quite the place. So, you know, I had limited experience. I'd grown up at clubs. We were members at North Jersey, Glen Ridge, and Hackensack in New Jersey. And so I really wasn't sure what to expect. I knew that I was going to work hard and keep my head down, and I did not really know what a stimp meter was, and I really didn't know that much about agronomics. But I have really studied up since then, and I've learned a lot more.
Now, food is a major part of the experience of any club, but specifically at Wingfoot, why is the culinary experience so important to your members and to the success of Wingfoot?
You know, several years ago, and I have to think now, it's about, so after the 06 Open, so about 12 or 13 years ago, we made a very conscious decision that we no longer wanted to serve, quote, club food. You know, I think we've all been there, especially if you're of my generation. Clubs had notoriously bad food, and they had notoriously bad service. It didn't matter. The members were going there anyway. It wasn't, the whole culinary thing hadn't taken off yet. There wasn't Food Network. There wasn't, you know, all this emphasis. And so we went out and hired, and it was funny. It was Billy O'Keefe was the president of the time. And you were referring before to the young man who caddied during the 74 Open. Billy O'Keefe, president of Wingfoot, is the brother of Michael O'Keefe, Danny Noonan. And as you may know, Aunt Danny Noonan, Michael O'Keefe was here during the Open.
I do remember
caddied,
that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And so a great family, and he was a great president. And so we said, you know, let's make this a real experience. So we went out and actually hired a New York Times reviewed chef. And I'll never forget the conversation because, you know, we were at, prior to that, we were very sort of controlling about everything. And I said to Billy, you know, what should we do? He said, just let him do his job. He's a you know, recognized chef. Let him have some fun. Let him do his job. And that's what we did. And that began this renaissance, if you will, of the food program at Wingfoot. And it's now, I'm happy to say, it's funny, the McMahon Group, which is a survey group nationally known, they the last time we did a major survey, they said, we have the greatest food in all of clubdom. And that's based upon the thousands of clubs that he surveys. We're very proud of the fact that we have now become everyone's favorite place to dine.
Colin, your career has spanned, I mean, over 30 years at this point. What three lessons have you learned along the way that you would pass on to younger GMs that are just getting into the business?
I was going to say, don't do it.
That's not what we're trying to accomplish here, Colin. We're trying to bring people into the game, baby.
No. I would. It's been a great career. You know, my children, I have five children. They grew up at the club in some form or fashion, working, practicing. So it's really been a great way to spend the last 30 years. So the three lessons, I think, first would be take your time. You know, clubs are generally not in a rush unless there's something dramatically, you know, systematically wrong. So take your time. Be thoughtful about the process of change. Don't just, and I learned that lesson, by the way. This isn't something that I knew when I started. You know, I think the other thing is that even though we're in the hospitality business, there's a discipline involved. This isn't just, you know, throw on a nice tie and a white shirt and show up and you've done your job. You have to have a program, a purpose. You really have to be willing to not just put the time in, but put the time in efficiently and have a plan and stick to that plan and remain disciplined. It's very easy, especially in a club environment where, you know, a new committee wants to go in this direction, another committee wants to go in that direction. And you have to be a very steady sort of voice of reason to say, no, this is the plan. Let's keep going in this direction. It will work. Trust me. So I'd say the discipline involved. And I'd say the last thing, and I know this sounds very sort of cliche and hackneyed, but it's, you have to have fun. You know, you can't be in the hospitality business in whether it involves golf or country club stuff. You have to have fun. And by fun, I don't mean yucking it up all the time, which isn't a bad thing to do, but there's a time and place for that. I always say to young managers, leave your ego at the door. This is not about you. It's about the membership. It's okay to be wrong. Make the effort. Be self-deprecating. If something doesn't go well, don't sort of beat yourself up over it. Learn from the lesson, but have fun. And so those would be, I'd say, the three lessons.
Colin, last question here. You are the general manager of Wingfoot. If producer Shane showed up at the gates of Wingfoot, do you have a protocol in place to swiftly escort him off the grounds?
Well, I've already captured his image. We have fed it into our security system.
Perfect.
We are running. We do have license plate readers at the gate.
Awesome.
So, Shane, you're now on the board.
So you've got it in place. That's perfect.
We all hoped for
100% and expected. Quite frankly,
good.
And especially without a collared shirt. I mean, Shane, you know. The T-shirt's not going to cut it.
The STP T-shirt, even at Wingfoot, is a little much.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Colin Burns, general manager of Wingfoot, we appreciate your time, sir. We're going to do a takeaway. Then we're going to play a game called Sticker Hack. Do you want to stick around for that?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back to you in just a second. Mike, there he is, Colin Burns, general manager of Wingfoot, one of the most storied, historic golf clubs in the world. And he's been there for 30 years watching that place grow. Your takeaway from that interview?
Number one, Wingfoot is just such a storied club, and it's fascinating to kind of hear some of the behind the scenes of how they run things. I think the one takeaway for me is even the older clubs now, I think, are realizing that they've got to adjust and come into the 21st century of golf and who are the patrons of golf. And I think they've done a great job of making those subtle adjustments. It's not you know, just something that's going to change overnight, but bringing it into, you know, modern times.
My takeaway is very simple. I was not thinking around the hospitality, food experience. As a general manager, you just think it's a golf club, so he's got to make sure the tournaments are put on and there's catering there, and you know that the hot dogs are on the roller or whatever the hell. That's what I was in my head. But for 30 years, he has cultivated a membership, and he has made sure that his staff and those around are cultivating that experience and that excitement. And because I can assume it's not cheap to be a member there. It's not cheap to be a member really anywhere. You have to feel prideful in your work, and it sounds like that he has. And in 30 years in the hospitality business, in any place, let alone at the most famous golf club in America, is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think a lot of golf clubs have realized that they're competing not just for the dollars that their members spend on dues or whatever, but then on Friday night, are they going to go out to dinner at, you know, whatever restaurant down the road, or are they going to come to the club and spend their money there? And I think that's something that a lot of golf clubs have realized, that the only way you do that is by having, you know, top notch food and service.
The golf club food was just there because they knew people were going to be there.
Right.
So I guess we have to have food. It's kind of like the concession stand or something. But it's a very different experience. And we've seen that change around golf at clubs, even public, private, doesn't matter, where the restaurant is someplace. I might not even go play golf. I might just go eat.
Yeah, they're much more thoughtful about it these days, I think.
100%. Yeah. Colin's back. Colin, welcome back to the Stick and Hack Show.
Thank you for having me back. I'm glad I made the cut.
He was gone for 2.5 minutes.
Well, what if
I got to find a new way to come to do that.
If we'll ever have, we're going to start, here's what we should do. We should start doing, like, after we come back for this, we decide, are we going to bring them back or not on the
interview? Yeah, that's the power.
I like that.
That's the power we have now. All right, we're going to play a game, Colin, called Stick or Hack. And I don't know what happened in the pre-production meeting, but the topic is Stick or Hack exotic pets. Okay? Stick or Hack exotic pets. You had the similar reaction that Mike did. All right, number one. We'll go to Colin first, and then no, we'll go Mike, Colin, me.
Okay,
right, so here we go. Mini pig.
Hack.
Colin?
Hack.
Yeah, I say stick. A mini pig walk around your house? Are you for real? No, absolutely.
Way. Absolutely.
100%.
Nope.
Love it.
Can't do it.
Iguana.
Hack.
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 Too many of them.
There are too many of them.
I'm not a big reptile person.
There are too many of them.
I'm big into reptiles.
Lemur.
Stick. Yeah.
Stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, lemurs are
cool.
They are badass. Sugar glider.
All right. Sugar gliders, are they the little like flying squirrel looking deals?
They sure are, buddy. All and right. If you say anything other than hack, I'm going to punch you right here live on the show.
That's hack.
Colin.
Stick. I love them. Love watching them.
Yes.
Oh God. We had a neighbor that had a sugar glider, and it's the strangest thing ever. They sit like right in on your chest, underneath in a pocket and stuff. And he would be talking to me for a half hour at a dinner party. All of a sudden, this stupid head would pop out of the pocket, and the thing would leap at you. It's the scariest animal in America. It may be in the world. They're awful. Hack. Okay. Sloth.
Stick.
Stick.
Sloths are awesome.
Yeah. Shocking. Hack. I want something that moves.
Sloths are awesome.
Hedgehog.
I'm going to go stick with the hedgehog. Yeah.
Stick. They're badass.
Yeah.
I would say stick only because it takes me back to my childhood.
Yeah. Hedgehogs are cool.
Sonic.
They're fun.
Right? Well, not the restaurant.
Yeah.
But
video game.
Also,
yeah,
which also you. Stick. Bonus stick or hack? Sonic restaurant.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Hedgehog, yeah, I would say stick. Although it would be a good conversation starter, but it could be dangerous if you have little kids.
Sure.
Don't they have those little spikies? Are they soft spikes or are they hard spikes?
I don't think they're sticky spikes. I don't remember. I haven't been around.
I wish there was some way we could just look that up quickly.
Producer Shane.
Shane.
See? God. Thank you.
See? He has it.
So good.
A blue macaw.
That's a bird, right?
Yeah, it's a bird.
It's like a parrot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's super stick. Blue and yellow.
Yeah.
Yellow.
Stick. Yeah.
It's like stick and hack colors, actually.
Yeah.
Colin?
Stick. I love the birds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say stick, although my household hates birds and they are.
I'm not a like bird okay. fan in general, but yeah.
There's no way I would have a blue macaw.
I wouldn't but either, but I still think they're cool.
Yeah. All right. Owl. I don't know.
Hack.
I think I love it.
Who has an owl as a pet?
Well, they're exotic pets. That's the they? Point. Who has is a it, mini pig?
Is it?
Yeah.
An owl?
An owl.
Let me go to the owl store.
Let's pick up an owl.
Kids, yeah, come on.
Yeah.
I didn't see any in Petco last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, guys, we're getting off track.
Hack.
Is it a,
it's a hack?
Hack, Colin?
Actually, you know, if you think of a horned owl, they're really quite great hunters. But since I have a puppy now,
see.
I don't want any of them taking my puppy.
Right.
So it's a hack.
Yeah.
I'd have an owl if I had a sugar glider. Watch that catastrophe. That's the only way I'd have an owl.
That would be interesting.
I got enough people watching me, judging yeah. me at my house anyway. I yeah. don't need an owl to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Shane's trying to get into the show. Why don't you just...
He is. Yeah. He always is.
Why don't you just...
What's that? What else is
sit there? Over there and make sure we're in yeah. focus, yeah. would you? Snake.
Hack. I'm... No way.
Zero.
Zero.
Colin.
For hack. Me. Zero.
Yeah. Hack.
I don't Ugh. Want anything to do with snakes.
Yuck. Speaking of producer Shane, hairless cat.
Hack. I am not a cat person, number one. A hairless cat Ugh. On top of it is like a nightmare to me.
Colin?
I have a relative with a hairless cat. It is the freakiest,
yeah.
scary, so... zombie-like.
Yeah.
Forget it.
No. I can't think yeah. of any reason on earth.
They look like they could murder you at any moment. At any moment.
And some have. Oh, yeah. Some have.
Yeah.
A hairless cat.
No way.
Where? How do you even explain... That and I think people do that for attention. Oh, do you see my hairless cat on a pillow? No, I don't. In fact, I want to leave immediately. Where's my owl? Oh man, Stick and Hack Show. Colin Burns, general manager of Wingfoot. Thank you, sir. A pleasure and honor to have you on the show, and continued success in your career there at Wingfoot and beyond.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Adam and Shane. Thank you, and please don't show up at Wingfoot.
Just him. Perfect, specifically. Perfect. We're fine.
We're coming. We're going.
Specifically.
We're showing up on like a Tuesday.
Oh, man. All right. Thank you. There he is. Colin Burns. Mike, great show. This is the Stick and Hack program. Possibly the greatest golf show in the free world. From the greatest golf club in the world without the course, go to stickandhack.com. Become a member today and change your life. Won't change your game, but it'll change your life. Go get yourself a pet owl while you're at it. Maybe a mini pig. See you later.
Fratty, buddy. Peace out, guys.
Okay, we're done. This has been the Stick and Hack Show. Go to stickandhack.com to become a free member of the world's greatest golf club without the course.